As we enter the early summer, I had a huge scare on my lawn the other day. What I woke up to was insane. So I asked Chris his advice. I sent him an email. I sent him photos. Luckily, he was able to explain to me what it was. You're never going to believe it. We get into it at the beginning of episode 6. We also talked about the crazy thing that you probably never knew about the Women's World Cup and the turf that they play on. Then Chris talks about what your lawn should look like in the spring, summer, and then the fall. And we preview the big Making of a Lawn finale episode that we're going to record. It's going to be at my house. We're going to reveal the lawn, the making of a lawn. We've been making it since early spring. I'm going to have a whole bunch of coworkers over, and Chris and I will do the podcast live from my backyard. But first, let's get into the penultimate episode of the Making of a Lawn podcast. Hi, I'm Kevin Begley from Star 99.9, and this is Making of a Lawn, presented by Tiedem Brown. All right, episode 6. I can't believe we're about to do 6 of these already.
Yeah, I'm flying by.
Yeah, it's Kevin Begley. It's the Making of a Lawn podcast with Tiedem Brown. I'm here with Chris, and these episodes have been so fun to do each week, and I have a big thing this week to ask you about. So emailed you the other day. My wife, I'll go back and start with my wife texting me about 8 o'clock in the morning the other day. I had just left for work. She said, there's something wrong. And that's all she texted me. And I was like, what? Like, I was taking our daughter to daycare. I'm like, what's wrong? And then the picture came through. She's like, no, with the lawn. There's something wrong with the lawn. And I was like, oh, no. Like, what did I do? And then in my head, I thought maybe one of the neighbors was mad that our lawn was looking good and like burned it. And because I'll describe the picture, it basically looked like this black, almost like little beads, but like it almost looked like the grass was burned out, like someone lit it on fire.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like, it looks terrifying. Mm-hmm. So I had emailed you the pictures. And I said, something's going on with the lawn. What do you think this is? And we were all nervous. And then you wrote back. So I'll let you explain what was going on.
You ended up with my absolute favorite turf disease. it's weird that I've got a favorite turf disease.
Right.
You know, that's not one of those things most people have a favorite of.
I guess it makes sense in the field you're in. That
yeah, I guess
you have
so,
the
yeah.
favorite turf disease.
But there's two reasons why it's my favorite. Number one, the name, slime mold.
So that's the official name of it,
that's
slime
it. It's
mold.
Slime mold, which is just the awesomest name because
it really
so
is.
Disgusting.
Yeah, it sounds terrible.
Exactly. And the second reason why it's my favorite disease is because it's really innocuous. It's not anything to really worry about.
Well, that's, I breathed a sigh of relief when you wrote that back in the email. I was like, oh man, because I was definitely stressed about it. I was like, what, did I do something? Like, what happened?
Yeah, no, nothing you did. Just, that's the way turf diseases go. It's just a matter of the environment and the conditions at the time and the humidity and the amount of rain and the combination of just everything being perfect for that specific fungus to just kind of go nuts and start populating and spreading around. And luckily, this is one that just kind of coats the leaves of the grass with sort of a black, dusty, pilly appearance.
Because I even walked over there and sort of like kicked it with my foot a little bit, and it puffed up like almost like smoke. Yeah,
and that's exactly how you can treat it. Just go sort of wipe it off. You could take a hose and spray it down.
That's what I was going to ask,
off.
Like a hose or a rake maybe, or something just to, so you basically just spread it off the grass?
Yeah. Huh. And even that, even if you didn't, it'll just kind of fall off on its own pretty quickly, and it really doesn't cause any damage.
But this must be something that people see all the time in their lawn and do have the exact same reaction I did. Like this, because it looks awful. Like it's funny because the name and the look seem terrible, but it's just ironic that it's not.
Yeah, it's actually a little bit of a rare one. So that's another reason why this is kind of fun, because we get to talk about one of the diseases that you just don't see all the time.
Yeah.
So red thread we see all the time. Dollar spot we see all the time. And then some really bad years we'll see Pythium, we'll see brown patch. But, you know, slime mold, that's not one we see all the time. So that's kind of fun.
Now, why don't you see it all the time? Is it just because of how the weather is that season? Or
for any turf grass disease to occur, there's got to be a few different factors in place. And I'm not going to bore you to death with all the details on that.
Right.
But some have a wider set of ranges within which they can thrive. And so, for example, some diseases might do well between 60 degrees and 80 degrees. Mm-hmm. And when I say do well, I mean do badly for your lawn.
Right.
Whereas other diseases, it's got to be a much narrower window, and it's got to be the right temperature and the right level of humidity and the right amount of moisture and the right type of grass just in that spot. Mm-hmm. And getting all those conditions lined up, sort of that perfect alignment like the stars aligning, is just a rare occurrence. And so slime mold is one of those where it's just a rare occurrence that everything lines up perfectly where you get that disease. Luckily, it's a very mild one, and it's got that awesome name, so we got to see it this year before we finished up the podcast.
I feel honored that I got a slime mold. Now, is there a reason why... Now, it's only on the one side of my house. Is there a reason why it would be on just that one side and not the... Because it's not in the backyard at all, at least yet. But I assumed that it was going to spread to everywhere, but it's really just the one sort of area.
Well, I think that actually further defines the fact that it's a very narrow set of circumstances. So really, it was just in that area where everything was just right.
It just happened
to be. It just so happened to be there. But the other reason, too, is that one of the main factors in a disease happening in the lawn is you have to have the causal organism. So the disease-causing problem, in this case, the fungus that causes slime mold, has to be there.
Right.
And it's not going to be evenly spread all over your lawn. You'll have like a little bit of it over here, a little bit over there. Most of the time, it just kind of lies dormant in the top layer of soil and doesn't do anything. And it's only when the weather conditions just get perfect that it kind of starts taking off and covering the grass in that area.
Right. So it almost has to be, it's just like the concentrated areas where that all came together, all those different factors.
Yeah, all the different factors and the existence of the fungus in that area. And boom, there you go.
Now, is it normal? So we noticed it the other day, but is it normal for it to spread as the days go by, or like when does it start to go away, or is it just however you...
Usually it's just a few days because the weather conditions will change enough.
Oh yeah.
And so you don't really have to worry about it.
Yep.
You might see it for like a week or so. And it might spread a little bit, it might move from one spot to another a little bit. But for the most part, it's just maybe a week or so that you're going to see it.
Now, around. The other thing I've noticed, which I'm always curious about, is like mushrooms growing in your yard. What causes that? Is that normal? Is it bad? Should you try to get rid of them?
Great way to get rid of mushrooms. Practice your golf swing.
I love doing that.
Exactly.
I was just doing that last night. I should do it over by the mushrooms.
Perfect excuse. Just get there, knock the heads off, poof, get this poof of mushroom flying through the air.
But they're not harmful or anything to the grass.
No, they're not harmful. Actually, if anything, mushrooms are a good sign. It just means that you've got a lot of organic matter in the soil. So anything that's a fungus has to live on either dead or decaying or sometimes live organic matter. Okay, so, and actually we're going to get into this in just a minute when we talk about the Women's World Cup. I'm going to actually transfer. I'm going to try to segue from mushrooms to the Women's World Cup.
That's a fantastic segue.
Okay, so we're going to work on that. Hold on here. So mushrooms being a fungus need organic matter, either dead, dying, decaying, and the fact that you have them in your lawn is indicative of the fact that there is that organic matter in the soil. And therefore, you got some mushrooms, and that's fine. And they usually just kind of, again, similar thing. They're not even considered really a lawn disease. They're just a thing that pops up every now and then. Yeah, when you get a lot of rain and the weather conditions are just right, boom, they pop up. You go practice with your 3-iron, and boom, they're gone. And then, you know, maybe a month later, you see them popping up again. And nothing to really get worried about.
All right, good to know.
All right, so how do we get to the Women's World Cup?
Right, well, we're talking about golf. We're talking about sports. Another sport that you play on grass is soccer.
Well, that's one way to go. I was actually going to go with the organic matter thing.
Okay.
You're not going to see any mushrooms on the fields where the women are playing the Women's World Cup this year.
Now, why is that?
Why is that? Glad you asked.
Perfect
segue. It's almost as though I prompted you. Yeah. So, this is interesting. Not every field has done this, but I actually just learned about this recently, and I thought it was kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
We always hear about artificial turf being used on sports fields.
Right.
And actually, there was a big sort of brouhaha about this at the last Women's World Cup, where a lot of them were, they were playing on artificial fields, which is not really great on the knees. It's not great for the running. It's not great for the ball bounce. Everything about it. No professional athletes prefer to play on artificial turf, especially soccer players. It really kind of changes up the way the game's played.
Yeah.
And a lot of the women, I think rightfully so, got really upset that they were playing on artificial fields, where the Men's World Cup was all natural fields. None of the men would refuse to play on artificial turf.
Right.
So they were stuck playing on artificial turf. This was back in 2015.
Right.
So this year they're not on artificial turf, and I think the organization, I think it's still FIFA that runs this.
World Cup.
Yeah, runs the World Cup, Women's World Cup. They've mandated that in 2023 they have to be all natural grass fields.
Oh wow.
Now, they're playing on natural grass this time around, most of the fields. I think all of them. Don't quote me on that.
Right.
Okay. But the soil is actually artificial.
Okay. Oh, that's, how does that work?
Yeah, and it kind of blew me away.
Yeah, that's weird.
In all my years in this business, I've never really seen artificial soil.
Yeah.
I've seen close to it in the fact that a lot of golf course greens are actually grown in pure sand.
Okay. So technically that's artificial soil because it's like man-made, I guess?
Not really. I mean, sand is natural.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so sand is natural. It's not man-made, and sand is considered to be a type of soil,
right.
But it's not what you think of. I mean, you know, if you get a bucket of sand from the beach, you're not thinking, oh, I could grow some nice plants in this, yeah. Right? No, it's not what you would
think. So what is the artificial soil made up of?
So the artificial soil is actually made up of three different things. One is granulated cork. Now, I'm going to go ahead and make some assumptions here because I have not been involved in this end of the industry before, but
right.
I'm finding it interesting, and I'm going to be doing a little personal research just for no other reason than I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But it's granulated cork, which I can think of as offering a really nice cushion for the runners.
Yeah.
You think, okay, it's going to be a little bit springy and bouncy, right?
Somebody had to drink a lot of bottles of wine to get that whole field.
And I mean, hey, they're playing in France. So,
right, so
you
maybe
know,
they did.
I'm guessing there's a lot of corks lying around that you can use, right? And then they also have synthetic microfibers, little like fibrous things that you would mix in with the cork.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, as you can imagine, when you get a lot of those mixed in, that'll give it some stability.
Yeah.
That'll kind of help to hold it all in place so it's not just like mushing around. Like you can think, if it was pure granulated cork, you can imagine walking
on it. Yeah,
it'd be
spongy.
Really spongy, like too much.
So they mix that in.
So they mix the microfibers and that gives it a lot of firmness to it. And then one last thing they mix in is actually some sand. So they mix in some fine sand. So you've got microfiber,
that's interesting,
granulated cork, and sand. And together, that provides just this really idealistic physical structure of soil that allows for good root zone development for the grass, really fast drainage, which, as you can imagine, would be critical for a sporting event.
Yeah, because it's not the thick sort of dirt soil that is normally there.
That can just sponge and hold on.
Now, I wonder, do they put that artificial soil down first and then seed it? And then grow the grass? Like, how does that even work?
Again, this is going past my area of knowledge.
Right, you'll have to learn that in your research.
I'm
I might Google this, too.
Yeah, and I'm kind of really excited here because there's a whole area of this that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
And as you know, I'm like halfway to my master's degree in
turf
grass management.
So it's rare to get something that you don't really know this much about.
Yeah, so I'm excited, though. This is kind of cool. But
yeah, that's fun.
Knowing how these things work, I would absolutely imagine that, they would probably seed it.
Yeah.
I think it would work better growing it from scratch in this medium rather than trying to grow it elsewhere. And then you certainly couldn't bring in sod because the sod would have soil attached to it, and laying that on top of this,
it would be
mixture,
too much.
It wouldn't just be too much, it wouldn't work. You'd create a layering effect that would just totally mess everything up.
Now, a lot of the so when you watch football, so whether it be college or NFL or whatever, so a lot of those fields have those little like black pellets almost. So, but that's still artificial grass, right?
Yeah. That's an artificial grass. It's not like the old days of AstroTurf.
It was like a carpet.
Yeah, it was just a shortcut green carpet.
Yeah.
Pretty much that's all they were dealing with. No, this stuff is the newer, and they call it Field Turf, I think is one of the brand names.
Right, I've heard that.
And but there's other companies that provide the product. And it's longer artificial blades, and then they mix like a crushed rubber into it. And that provides that sort of springiness, and it gives you sort of, it's easier on the knees. Than
I was just going to say, they probably do it for the bodies and joints of the players.
Exactly.
But it looks like grass. So the way they do it, it sort of looks like blades of grass.
Oh, sure,
and not the carpet, like you said, like it used to.
Yeah, exactly. And it looks pretty good. I mean, I think when you get to those top tier athletes, every little nuanced difference will make a difference in your play. And so I can totally understand that, they're going to want to play in the real stuff.
It is interesting, though, like in the NFL, because, you go to Lambeau Field in Green Bay, that's going to be real grass. Mm. I mean, it's been there forever. So, and then it's funny that the league doesn't require everything to be the same. So every stadium's sort of different. I guess that adds to like the interesting factor of the NFL that you're playing in all these different elements.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's a little bit of a difference there, too, with football in that versus football. Okay.
So soccer. Yeah. Soccer.
We
football.
Call soccer.
American football.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think one of the differences there is that the ball bouncing and running along in soccer is going to...
It's much more of a factor.
Yeah. And I think that's really a key factor there.
That makes sense.
They're doing a lot more running. I mean, an average soccer player in a professional game, I think they run, I read one time, close to 7 miles in a game.
Wow.
And so that's going to take a toll on the knees. And
because it's constant. Yeah, there's a lot of stopping and going in American football.
Exactly.
Where it's just stop, stop, stop. Yeah.
So I think it does make a bigger difference on soccer than it would on American football, which is why a lot of American football teams probably don't mind the artificial turf.
Right.
The other big reason is that there's a lot of indoor stadiums, especially in northern climates.
True.
You can't grow natural grass indoors.
Right.
It needs that natural sunlight. So it's kind of, you have to.
Yeah.
But back in 1995, I'll just do another little segue here back to soccer. They actually, the U.S. Held the World Cup. Actually, it would have been 1994, my mistake. I apologize.
No, no problem.
The U.S. hosted the World Cup. And I remember they did host games in some of the indoor stadiums.
Hmm.
And they had to bring in a sort of super thick cut sod to lay down so that the teams could come in and play on natural grass.
Oh.
So, like, they probably spent like $500,000 per game on
just,
these.
Just to do that, yeah.
Just to bring in this sod, drop it on the field in a way that, you know, it could later be removed. And, yeah, it'll survive for like a week or two in that condition, but then it'll start kind of going downhill without the natural sunlight. But they were able to get these natural grass fields in these indoor stadiums temporarily. Yeah.
Wow. I would think that there's already people working on the next Women's World Cup for the turf. So there's going to be a lot of meetings leading up to that. Like, here's all the stadiums. Here's what we need for turf. Here's what we need for artificial soil. Like, you don't even think about that when you're watching it, like, unless you listen to this podcast. But yeah, you're watching these games. And you don't even think of all the, you know, hours and hours that go into trying to figure out the grass.
Oh, it's a tremendous amount. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think from what I have read, the governing body has mandated that any country bidding on the Women's World Cup in the future
has to meet certain
standards. You
have
to have all the fields ready. You have to be able to show that you've got X number of natural grass fields that they can play on.
Right, because they don't want
to be. Yeah, it's just going to be as simple as don't even bother bidding if your country only has artificial turf fields. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And they don't want to start or get close to starting and be like, wait a second, this is not what this is, doesn't meet the standards that we need.
Yeah, exactly.
So back to my lawn for a second. Application 3 was just put down.
Mm-hmm.
So your guys from Teton Brown came. They put the application. The one thing that I was going to tell you that I love is how they leave the thing on the doorknob and then they put little notes in it too. Like, this is looking good. This needs water. This, like, it's a great sort of thing. Like, I thought they just did that to say, like, okay, there's chemicals on your yard. But I grabbed it off the doorknob and it said, like, oh, could use some water here, and had like tips, which I thought was super fun.
Well, thank you.
And I listened to the tips and I started my sprinkler strategy after I saw that, because one of the tips said, like, your lawn does need some water.
Mm-hmm.
And this was prior to getting a lot of rain, so it had been dry a couple days. So I got out the hose, I hooked everything up, and I started the sprinklers, just basically moving it every, you know, 10 or 20 minutes to different parts of the lawn.
Great.
So it was going. But what was application 3, what was actually involved in application 3?
Yeah, application 3 was basically a summer fertilizer. It's something very slow release. It's going to kind of spoon feed the grass the nutrients. You don't want to try to goose the lawn too much with a lot of fertilizer, try to get it to grow really fast and strong.
Right, right.
If you do that, you actually, remember we talked earlier about the diseases, and we talked about how just the right environmental conditions coming about. Okay, there's some really severe diseases that are a little bit crazy that love lots of fertilizer.
Oh.
Okay, and so.
So if you over-fertilize.
You over-fertilize in the summer, you could look at it one day and go, wow, this is great. Look how fast it's growing. Look how lush and green it is. 3 days later, it's just like all slimy, dead brown stuff.
And I bet a lot of.
What happened?
And I bet a lot of people do that because they think, you know, oh, the more I put, it's going to look better.
Yeah, more is not better.
Right.
Yeah, and there's been more than one time in my career where somebody has complained that the lawn looks hungry, and we're in July, and my response is, good.
Right.
That's what we want.
Yeah, exactly.
You do not want it looking super lush right now, because then it's going to be toast.
Yeah.
You're better off leaving it a little bit hungry, and then let's wait until the weather cools off, and we're beyond that weather type of pattern. That we can get it looking good again.
So that's interesting. What is so the lawn usually looks the most lush in the springtime, right? So sort of like April, May area?
Yeah, spring and fall, but yeah.
Spring and fall?
Because the spring, it's so rainy.
Yeah, so it's sort of normal to see it really green and lush, because that's what I saw on our lawn.
Mm.
And then throughout the summer, it's sort of like you start to see, like you said, looks hungry or looks sort of, you know, dryish or summer. And then all of a sudden it gets to the fall again and it turns green again, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the cycle.
So, because I feel like so many people, when they see their lawn, they think it should be like lush and green the whole entire time.
Right.
Which isn't the case. Like, a healthy lawn probably doesn't look green the entire spring to fall.
Usually not. And I think this is a little bit like the problem of putting, you know, supermodels on, you know, magazine covers all the time.
Yeah.
And you get this unrealistic idea of what a person should look like.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, people are busy watching golf on TV. They're busy watching sports. They're busy watching all sorts of things where the lawns are just looking perfect year round.
Yeah.
And yeah, they can do that. But again, you're talking about crazy high budgets and professionals there working constantly to
around the clock.
It.
Yeah.
Just around the clock. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not something you want to even attempt on your lawn. you got to keep in mind that, at least in the Northeast, in Connecticut, we live in an area where the temperature throughout a year will range from below zero to over 100 degrees sometimes.
Right.
Not every year does it get that hot, but sometimes it does. Very few plants have that wide of a range that they can survive in a robust way.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you've got grasses that do really well down south because they're really good in the heat, but then come winter, they're toast.
Yeah.
Okay, then you have grasses that can hang in there through the winter just fine, but when it starts getting in the mid-90s, upper 90s, they're not going to just, they're not going to do very well.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, one of the things. When we get into the summer, I just say, summer's a great time to see where the problems are. Let your lawn tell you where the problems are. So watch. If you see areas that turn brown and die off really quickly as soon as it starts getting a little bit warm, then we can take a look at that and say, hey, what happened here? What's going on? Maybe there's a rock right near the surface, like a big rock, and we didn't realize that there was only half an inch of soil covering that rock.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And so you say, oh, okay, there's the problem. Let's do this. In the fall, let's take that, let's mark that area off right now, take a few pictures, and then in the fall, when the seed growing weather becomes good again, can throw some extra topsoil on top of that, build it up maybe 4 or 5 inches, taper it off into the rest of the yard, reseed it. Next year, you shouldn't have that problem.
Yeah.
So kind of let the summer tell you where the problems are. And if there's certain types of grass that just can't hang in there, that die off in the summer, let them die off. Let some of that natural selection take place. In the fall, reseed with much stronger varieties of grass. Over time, you end up building a lawn that can handle things much better. And that's really the goal, is to get a long-term, strong, healthy lawn that doesn't require tons of chemicals or even fertilizers or tons of water to keep it looking good at all times.
Right. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Exactly. I'm gonna steal that. But yeah, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Yes.
Teton Brown. It's a marathon, not a sprint. All right. So, so the next episode we record is going to be our big season finale, which we're going to record at my house, actually, which is super fun. We're gonna have a cookout. My wife and I are gonna fire up the grill, and we're gonna record. We're gonna do a Facebook Live too, so when we do that, people who follow us on Facebook, they can watch it there too, and then we'll put up the actual recorded version of the podcast after that. But we'll do it in my backyard if the weather holds out. If not, we can do it inside, but either way, it's gonna be super fun. I can't wait to do a podcast on location. And then we'll cook out, we'll talk. So during that podcast, I'm gonna invite a bunch of the coworkers here from Starry 9.9 over, so maybe we'll talk to some of them. We'll talk about what they think of the lawn. So it'll be a fun sort of season finale to making of a lawn.
I got to tell you, I'm really looking forward to this, but now I'm a little bit antsy, and I'll tell you why. I should have planned ahead a little bit longer, because if I had thought about the fact that I'm going to be on Facebook Live and people will actually be seeing me, I might have tried to start losing weight a little bit earlier.
Oh, no, you're fine.
So, I got a few extra dad. I got the dad bod going on big time. Let's be honest. I got the dad bod.
Maybe our next season. I mean, I'm trying to get in shape, too. Maybe our next season can be getting in shape podcast.
Get a personal trainer.
Making of a bod.
I love it. Yeah.
Making of a dad bod. That will be it.
So I actually got really good with my eating habits last week, and now I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I got a barbecue coming up here. How much can I indulge and not totally throw myself off track?
Right.
So I'm definitely going to enjoy myself, but we'll see if I can get back into the swing of things as soon as it's over.
Right. And in the meantime, I'll try to rake out that slime mold.
There you go.
On the side
perfect.
Of the lot.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Chris. This was super fun.
Hey, I had a blast. Looking forward to seeing you next week.
All right. We'll talk to you on the season finale of Making of a Lawn podcast with Teton Brown.